Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Good morning. Glad you're with me. Jan Smith, Gabriella Mendizabal will be with us with Tallahassee Community Chorus. And we've got Michael Hirsch, author and filmmaker, along with Barbara Goldstein talking about The Liberators. And Dr. Dennis Fiorini will be with us talking about his latest book, In the Business Spotlight. So stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax. And it's done.
The holidays are coming. Well, in a few months, and that's why now is the time to shower up with the beautiful custom shower enclosure from Widen Glass. Widen Glass will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. They've designed and installed tub and shower enclosures for Tallahassee homeowners for over 70 years. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures provide style and luxury at an affordable price. With the holidays coming, that means family, and that means now is the time to shower up with style. Call Widen Glass today, 222-5781. Or chat online with one of their service professionals at widenglass.com. W-H-I-D-D-O-N, Widen, the best name in glass since 1945. Call 222-5781.
Going green just got easier with high-performance window film from Truck and Car Concepts.
Hi, I'm Joe Doty, owner of Truck and Car Concepts. We have over 18 years' experience. Our sun control films eliminate 79% of the heat gains and 99.9% of the UV rays to prevent fading.
Use less energy and save money with professionally installed high-performance window film from Truck and Car Concepts. One block east of Weems Road on Mahan Drive, across from Kraft Nissan. Call 656-8800.
It's a great day in Tallahassee, and even greater because you are here with me. Well, let's see, you're there, I'm here, and through the magic of radio, we are together. Whether you're listening here about in Tallahassee with our good friends, 93.3 FM, Freedom 93, our home station in Tallahassee, or maybe you're listening online across the world somewhere for whatever reasons you are where you are. I'm glad that you've tuned in and glad that I get to be a part of your morning. In this case, it's part of the afternoon because we're broadcasting at a special time. This 5 o'clock occurrence of Tallahassee Talks, courtesy of our good friends here at Alcom Marketing and Advertising who make it possible for us. They are the producers of this here radio show. So we're fortunate to have the luxurious studios of Alcom at our disposal and brought to you by very fine businesses around Tallahassee, including Tommy T's over there in Midtown. You've heard me talk about Steve and John and the great service they do for your car and for yourself, for your own personhood. Because, you know, they're nice guys, and they're very smart, and they can answer lots of questions, and they do all kinds of automotive repair and service, and a very tidy priced oil change package. I mean, I think it's the best price in town, and they do all the right things, checking all the fluids and all that jazz. Remember them, Tommy T's in Midtown. Who else do we like to talk about? Oh, Heather Baker. Yeah, Heather Baker is the proprietor at The Green Room, a hair specialist, a designer, I don't know what you'd say, a hairstylist. What makes Heather so, I think, so different is that she really looks for your best look. And Lord knows I certainly need help there. And she's been quite helpful, I might add, the official hairstylist for Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. And be sure to stop in then at The Green Room. Let them know where you heard it right here. We have such a great show lined up for you. I hope that you will stay with us through the entire 2 hours. We'll be here today until 7 p.m. Of course, we're getting ready for FSU football later tonight. They play at 8 o'clock. They're down there in Miami playing the Hurricanes, are they not? And I'm sure everybody will be eager to tune in for that. It's on ABC at 8. And, you know, Florida State Seminoles walk in there at 9-0. Hurricanes are 6-3. And the next most highly touted game, because once again, everybody's kind of waiting to see whether or not someone can come along and knock FSU off its perch. Lots of stories about that, of course, in the news. And among those, Jameis Winston's hearing has been delayed to December 1st. So that's kind of a can that's been kicked down the road a bit. Carlos Williams has not been charged for domestic battery in that particular investigation. So that's sort of moot at this point. And so we hope that everybody else associated with Florida State football will just play the game. And I'm certain that Coach Jimbo Fisher would be saying yes and amen to that. Let's just stay on task here. Let's play the game the way it was meant to be played. What else do we have in the news? You know, one of our clients here, or one of the clients for Alcom Marketing, is a company that is now celebrating 51 years of service. Tasty Pastry Bakery, which all of us, I'm sure by now, have benefited from at one time or another. And so we're wishing all the good folks at Tasty Pastry Bakery, Debbie and her crew, a happy 51 years of service in Tallahassee. That's kind of a neat thing, isn't it? Lots of neat businesses around town, including the Fiorini Chiropractic Center. Dr. Fiorini will be with us here momentarily in our business spotlight feature. Going to find out about his new book and some of the ways he's working to try to keep us healthier, living longer, and living better in the meantime, you know? And so it's not just about not being in pain. It's about enjoying the life you're living. So he's very good at that. My experience, anyway, with Dr. Fiorini. So he's a good man and good person to have around on these sort of topics regarding health and living well. And, of course, you heard me mention in the opening here, we've got in the second hour, Michael Hirsch, an author and filmmaker, and our good friend Barbara Goldstein. She's the director of HERC, which is the Holocaust Education Resource Council in Tallahassee. This is an organization that for its many years has helped educators mostly by providing them the resources they need, the educational materials they need to teach about the Holocaust. And that was mandated by the state legislature 20 years ago. So the folks with HERC have assembled and continue to contribute to this assembly of educational materials that are then made available wherever they may be needed. Grade school, middle school, high school teachers that benefit because they have access to all of those materials and information. Well, here comes Michael Hirsch, who wrote a book called The Liberators. And it happened that this week, we not only honored our veterans on Veterans Day, but then the folks at HERC Thursday night gathered for their annual benefit dinner, and Michael Hirsch was their guest speaker. This book, The Liberators, he's going to tell us about, and we're going to find out how that all came to be. In writing this book, he found among those that he interviewed over a period of almost 3 years, some incredible stories, remarkable accounts from soldiers who were firsthand involved in the liberation of Nazi death camps, concentration camps, and labor camps there at the close of World War II. This would have been in the spring of 1945, April, as a matter of fact, April 1945. So this coming April marks the 70th anniversary then of the liberation of these camps. And in world history, it is a staggering collection of events. and a period of time that is unparalleled in my estimation. We have not seen such horrible brutality. And you can talk about a lot of other things that went on during World War II among the Chinese and the Japanese and or the Korean War, the Vietnam conflict. But the fact is, all of these events were based in cultural antecedents, you know, a kind of preamble or a predisposition that encouraged the tolerance of such behavior. And that's one of the things we're going to get into talking about with Michael Hirsch, this marvelous individual, a man who will describe it for himself as to how he engaged this topic and how he was able to track down, I think, over 150, maybe 180 of these soldiers who were part of that whole liberation. Folks, we look forward to having you stay with us. Dr. Fiorini is with us here in studio. We'll be getting to him in just a minute. You stay with me. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
The holidays are coming. Well, in a few months, and that's why now is the time to shower up with the beautiful custom shower enclosure from Witten Glass. Witten Glass will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. They've designed and installed tub and shower enclosures for Tallahassee homeowners for over 70 years. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures provide style and luxury at an affordable price. With the holidays coming, that means family, and that means now is the time to shower up with style. Call Witten Glass today, 222-5781, or chat online with one of their service professionals at wittenglass.com. W-H-I-D-D-O-N, Witten, the best name in glass since 1945. Call 222-5781.
Changing the face of talk radio in Tallahassee. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We have a lovely individual with us in our business spotlight here, Dr. Dennis Fiorini, who for his many years of service to this community has been operating Fiorini Chiropractic Center, along with his associates there, Dr. Atkinson, and the other Dr. Fiorini, his beloved wife, who has served faithfully at his side administratively. Great crew there, great staff, been the beneficiary of his kind and expert skills as an orthogonal chiropractor, and so we're going to get into a little bit about what that means. Plus, this is the really cool part, he's written a book, and it's a book that, according to the jacket says, will reveal to you the truth about the health care crisis, what and what not to eat. I need help there. The missing link that and I am the missing link that allows your body to work the way it was intended to. We're going to learn about that, and all for the same price of admission. The chiropractic technique that utilizes very specific angles and a light force instrument that allows your doctor to adjust without hard manipulation. So let's welcome our guest, Dr. Fiorini. How are you, sir?
Thank you very much. I'm doing terrific.
You are doing well, aren't you?
I can tell. I am lovely, as you said.
You are just lovely. Sweet, gentle, and true to the core, and a guy who, from my humble observation, has done a lot to contribute to the welfare of so many patients that he has served and others who have. This is not your first book. You've got a couple under your belt.
Yeah, we've contributed to a textbook on the technique that we use, the Atlas Orthogonal Technique, as well as another book on neck pain.
Yeah.
This is the first one that Dr. Atkinson and I have written together.
Okay. And the title of the book is?
True Health Can Be Yours.
True Health Can Be Yours.
A Guide to Outrageous Health.
So let's get at this first one. What is the truth about the healthcare crisis?
The problem is, Brian, as you probably know, we have a very difficult situation as human beings where we want all of our problems to be someone else's problems. Since 1992, when we opened our office, one of the things that I always notice about patients is when they come in, they want to tell you what the problem is so it can no longer be their problem. It's now the doctor's problem. And one of the most difficult things to do is to get a patient to own their problem and say, guess what? I might have had something to do with the situation that I'm in.
Just maybe.
And so one of the first the first chapter there, who's to blame is the finger pointing at you.
Yeah.
And I thought that that was a rather bold way to start off the book because it might have alienated a couple of people right away because they look down at themselves or they look in the mirror and they go, you know, if I hadn't been drinking a six-pack every night when I get home from work, or if I don't eat at McDonald's, three or four times a week, maybe I might not be in the condition that I'm in now.
Okay, well, let's get to that then.
Sure.
Because you're also saying there are certain foods that we should avoid, and there are certain foods that we should be eating.
Exactly. There's myriad things going both ways.
Right.
And without getting too far into it, because you can get the book and read all about that.
We just want you to read the book to us.
Well, here we go.
We only have a few minutes, but hey, what?
It's really an easy read. A lot of the things that we think are common sense are really not common sense. In fact, I just made a post this morning about that on our nutrition website. Things like, don't eat at McDonald's. Don't eat at the fast food places because the problem is their goal has never been to give you really good quality food.
Right.
Their goal has always been hot food fast.
Yeah.
That's what Ray Kroc said.
Yep.
That's what he wanted to do.
Yep.
So we need to get out of that mentality. We need to get out of that thing where we just need to grab something really fast to try and sustain life. Because the problem is if you get it fast, it's not going to be a good sustainable life for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
The whole idea of fresh fruits and vegetables seems like a no-brainer to most people.
Yeah.
When in fact it is a complete, they cannot grasp.
Would you agree though that as Americans we want to load it up with flavorings and salt and sugars and such so that, you know what, now if you put it in a jar and I can spread it around on my...
That's exactly right. And in fact, one of the things that we talk about in the book is high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah.
It has absolutely no nutritional value. It's made from corn, which is and we can get into a political discussion that I don't want to get into, but corn is a subsidized crop in the United States, and so we have an excess of corn. Mm. So they got to make something out of it that they can make money from. High fructose corn syrup has absolutely no nutritional value, and yet it's in almost everything that we eat. Mm. If you look at it look at any of your labels when you're buying food,
right.
It'll have that in that. And so one of the things that we tell people is learn to read the labels.
Read the labels.
If you can't pronounce one of the first three ingredients in there,
probably not.
You've got a problem. It's probably not good, healthy food.
We're probably not going to get to all of the points that I wanted to hear, but
sure,
do want to know what you think is the missing link that allows your body to work the way it was intended to. What would that be?
Certainly the missing link as I look at it and what I've seen in almost 30 years of practice is the connection between the brain and the rest of the body, which is right at the base of the skull, where the brainstem becomes the spinal cord. You see, all of the nerves have to start in the brain. They have to be conveyed to the rest of the body. So they have to go through what's called the spinal column. Well, to get to the rest of the spinal column, they have to go through an area that is very unstable called the cervical cranial junction, which is the skull. Right below the skull is a bone called the atlas, and right below that is a bone called the axis. The atlas is the most freely movable joint in the spine.
And that's what you particularly focus on as an atlas orthogonal chiropractor.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You see, it's the most unstable, the most freely movable part of the entire spine, and yet it's where the major portion of the neurological system has to go through to get to the rest of the body.
Folks, we're learning a lot here. Dr. Dennis Fiorini providing us this information in this very handy book. Again, the title, True Health Can Be Yours. Dr. Fiorini and Dr. Michael Atkinson, the authors. And we're going to get this book and maybe we can get a little bit healthier.
Then that would be great.
Maybe we could actually do some of the things that you're advising us to do.
Absolutely.
For our own good.
It'll help a lot of people live a lot longer life.
Thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Brian. I appreciate it.
Dr. Dennis Fiorini in the business spotlight here, Fiorini Chiropractic Center. Be sure to check him out online, FioriniChiropractic.com.
So, how's your car running?
Oh, it's great.
Well, that's good. And where'd you go?
SS Performance Group over on the west side of town. They are the real pros.
I thought SS Performance Group was for like...
engine modification.
Right, and...
muscle cars. Yeah, right. And oil changes, brakes, and tune-ups. Everything for every car. So I figure go pro with the best for everything I need, right?
Yeah, so they can work on my SUV.
Yep. Go pro.
SS Performance Group at 431 Capital Circle Southwest. Go online or call 575-0259.
More beauty, less bully. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So here we are, folks, on this Saturday in November. Thank you for staying with me in the hour. What a great show we have lined up today, and what a great weekend with all of the things going on around town, not the least of which... the performance of the Bernstein Mass. Now, some of you want to say Bernstein. That's fine. I say Bernstein. So just relax, will you please? The Tallahassee Community Chorus in performance tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock. That is Sunday, for those of you who have lost track of time. Tomorrow afternoon, 4 o'clock at the Ruby Diamond Concert Hall, Florida State University. We have with us the president of Tallahassee Community Chorus, Jan Smith, and the publicity director, Gabriella Mendizabal, who have graciously agreed to be part of this here fine radio show. Welcome, ladies. How are you?
Good, wonderful. Thank you for having
Thanks,
us.
Thanks, Brian. You're doing great.
Thank you. For all of those folks who are listening on radio and are not able to see through the radio wave psychically, I can tell you these two ladies look great this morning. You look great.
Thanks.
Yeah, so do you.
I feel wonderful. It's a good thing. So here we are talking about all of the good things that Tallahassee Community Chorus brings to our community and has for a number of years. Jan, reacquaint me. How far back does the chorus go? I guess we're...
Well, we are in our 27th season this season, so we go back quite a ways.
We do.
Yeah.
And with that 27 years of performing, there's been a lot of, would it be fair to say, growth and sort of an evolution then of how this organization has contributed to the, we'll call it, arts and entertainment world of Tallahassee, and it's become world famous, I think.
Yes, I think so. Yeah. We evolved from a community group of 37 singers to a mighty chorus of 230 voices, and we have performed all over the world, basically, and our musical repertoire has definitely become more challenging as time has gone by, and of course, all of this time, for most of this time, for the 27 seasons that we've been performing, our conductor has been Dr. Andre Thomas, who is world-renowned as a choral conductor and clinician, and we are so very fortunate
we are,
to have
that,
him.
In that respect, I think, as a community, it's remarkable that oftentimes people in Tallahassee don't know how accomplished he is and how well-respected he is internationally. Yeah. Gabby, you have been part of this whole effort for some time yourself. How did you get stuck with the publicity part of this? I mean, were you absent that day and they just handed out assignments and said, here, this is your job?
Well, on a Monday night, I was approached by two people who I call dear friends.
Trench coats.
Thinking we were having a nice,
sunglasses.
Friendly conversation.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've seen those guys.
Somehow I had my name written down on the dotted line, and I showed up at the next board meeting.
Yeah, there you go. Well, and from what I hear, you're doing a pretty cool job with all that, and
you've gotten
some great ink from our friends over there at the Tallahassee Democrat this week. They were publicizing you there in the newspaper. That's good, right?
Yes. Yeah, that was so exciting to see it on the front page of the Chronicle.
There you go. And Mark Hinson seems to really like you guys a lot. I know he's written about the chorus many times.
Yes, he has. I think he does. And yeah. He likes Dr. Thomas a lot.
Yeah. That doesn't hurt.
No.
Do you say Bernstein or Bernstein?
Well, we say Bernstein.
Do you?
I guess because of the German kind of pronunciation of the I
yeah,
in the second.
Yeah, I suppose so. Well, I'm going to say Bernstein just to spite you.
That's
since,
fine.
Since Jan and I have this sort of contentious relationship that goes back, I don't know how long, but
but it's a fun contentious relationship.
Is it sort of like racquetball?
Yeah, you know? It is sort of like racquetball.
You're always trying to hit me over the head with the racket,
and you're always trying to hit me with the ball.
Precisely. So this here Bernstein mass then happens tomorrow afternoon. Tell us about the performance. What's this? Why should we attend, I guess?
Well, this is the Florida premiere performance of the concert version of the Bernstein Mass. So it'll be the first time it's been performed live in Florida. We'll have our massive community chorus of 200-plus singers, plus we'll be joined by three high school women's choirs from Leon, Childs, and Lincoln High Schools.
You're kidding me.
The Mass has a treble or a children's choir, and they will be performing that function. And we'll have two wonderful soloists.
Yeah,
our tenor, who is the Mass has a celebrant, which is the kind of the main character of the Mass.
Yeah.
And that's a tenor solo, and that will be Jake Armstrong, who's known locally to people who have attended Florida State Opera. He was last seen in Cold Sassy Tree. And Abigail Rethwish will be our soprano soloist. And Abigail has sung with us on several occasions, and she just has a beautiful – there are a lot of high C's.
And beyond.
And beyond. And Abigail.
Yeah, rehearsals have no doubt. Rehearsal times have been absolutely stellar with you folks, right?
Yes, they have been. We had
folks,
everyone in rehearsal Monday night, everybody, all in one room.
This
so it was
is the
great.
Thing about the chorus. When you stop and think about it, even if you are not into some of these treasured works of old, it's a euphemistic way of saying classical music, you cannot pass up this opportunity. You're not going to find another performance of this nature and of this caliber. I can assure you that. And by the way, have you looked at the ticket prices? Are remarkably low. I mean, this is amazing. So you can get in, and tickets are still for sale, right? They can buy tickets at the door.
Yes, they can buy tickets at the door.
Yep. Again, it's at Ruby Diamond. So tickets are $20 general admission. Senior 62 and older for $15. And you spend more at McDonald's now for lunch, than $15.
Right.
Students are $5. So get your tickets. You could even do so here. Here we are on Saturday afternoon, broadcasting at this special time. It's late in the day, but I would just show up. I'd get over there and buy your tickets at the door. It's at 4:00.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the things that makes Tallahassee, I think, remarkably unique in North Florida and maybe throughout the region, because these are folks who are not, most of them are not paid professionals. I mean, I understand that the orchestra are professional musicians, but
right.
You folks do this for the love of it, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Amateur, right?
Yes, you amateur, non-auditioned amateur.
For the love of it.
Yes.
And when that love penetrates the work that these folks bring you, man, it's palpable. You just cannot leave there without being changed. What do you expect will be the outcome of this particular performance? Because I know you've got a lot of other... You're just really into the season now, right? And so you've got a lot of other performances up ahead. Does this sort of set the tone, do you think, for the rest of the performances going forward?
I think so. This is our first concert of the season, and it's a little bit more modern music than we typically start off with. So the Bernstein Mass was composed by Leonard Bernstein to commemorate the opening of the Kennedy Center in 1971.
Yes.
So it is a work very reflective of its time, but also has a lot of relevance today And it's the shorter concert version, so it's not the long version that some people may be familiar with.
Yes.
We're also going to perform the Haydn Te Deum and a couple of other pieces from Bernstein's Candide.
Marvelous.
Abigail will sing Glitter and Be Gay, and we'll close the concert with Make Our Garden Grow,
wow,
which is a gorgeous, very
absolutely
gorgeous piece.
Yeah.
And then for our Unity concert in January, January 24th, it'll be our 10th Unity concert. We're going to celebrate three legends of Unity, Gandhi, Mandela, and King.
Wow.
So we will have music celebrating those, the works of those three giants of Unity, including hopefully a repeat appearance by Swara Bahini, which is an Indian, a group from India that sings.
Oh, very cool.
They were in one of our prior Unity concerts. And a piece is being composed by their leader, Srinivasa Kishori, who's also a member of our chorus, for that concert. So we're really looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. And then we'll close the season in the spring with Elijah. So that will be the big classical work that we'll do this year.
Well, folks, this is, I mean, I'm getting like a, I don't know, some kind of a mind explosion thing going on here, because I'm just talking with Gabriella Mendizabal, who is the publicity director for Tallahassee Community Chorus, and Jan Smith, the president. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Stay with me.
Folks, there are four ways to shine in life, and Merry Maids has it all going on. Experience, reliability, thoroughness, and professionalism. And that's why we rely on Merry Maids right here at our studios. And I want to tell you, when I come into the office and I find the studio fresh and clean, it's a great feeling. And the neat thing about it is they get into all the details that I probably would overlook. But I want to tell you something else. As a new customer, when you sign up for their 24 weekly or biweekly cleanings, on your first cleaning, you're going to save up to $400, because they'll spend that first cleaning doing the extra, extra deep cleaning that you probably would do. Here's another special offer. You're going to save yourself 10% on that first call just by mentioning Tallahassee Talks when you call. Would you do that for me? Call Merry Maids this week. Here's the number, 386-2205, and tell them, I heard your ad on Tallahassee Talks, and I'm ready to receive 10% discount on my service. They'll do it for you. They're right here in Tallahassee. You can go online at merrymaids.com.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So we're back, and we're talking about Tallahassee Community Chorus, the performance of Leonard Bernstein's Mass. Yeah, they looked at each other like, see, they're waiting for me to say Bernstein. I'll wait till they're gone, and then I'll be saying Bernstein all day. Leonard Bernstein's Mass, and then also Joseph Haydn's Te Deum, being performed tomorrow afternoon, 4 o'clock, Ruby Diamond Concert Hall. Don't cheat yourself out of this. Do this. Tickets are available at the door for $20. If you're senior 62 and older, $15. Students are $5. We've got Gabby, affectionately referred to, the publicity director, Gabriella Mendizabal, and Jan Smith, the president, Tallahassee Community Chorus, for its history, almost 30 years now. These folks have been bringing us the best music in the world, and arguably working under the direction, the artistic direction of Andre Thomas, arguably one of the finest and in the world, and director of choral studies over there at Florida State University. Folks, this is a treasure, and you need to enrich your life, in my humble opinion. You've got a partner helping you with this particular, is it just this particular concert or for the season?
Yes, just for this particular concert. We like to partner every concert with a community, another nonprofit community organization, to give them the opportunity to educate our audience about what they do, or in some cases, they may need donations of items, you know, and we collect those at the concert.
I know you've done that for Second Harvest and several others.
Yeah, several other organizations. Yeah. We've had everything from canned goods to socks.
Yeah.
And shoes.
And man, this time of year.
Yeah. So this, for the fall concert, it's the Capital Area Community Action Agency who
Tim
will
Center
be our
and company.
Yeah, who will be our partner, and you know, they do a lot to help people fight poverty
they
in our area.
Do.
And they will have folks in the lobby, a table in the lobby to kind of greet our audience coming in and give them some information about what they do, and hopefully some of them will perform as some guest ushers for us.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, and they've been helping us publicize the concert, and we also publicize their organization in all of our publicity.
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. Gabby, what would you say to somebody who has never done this? They've never been a part of or have never heard the chorus perform?
I'd say come out and hear what we have to do. I mean, you know, like we said earlier, this is an interesting piece. It's a little more contemporary, but it does have that traditional cornerstone to it.
And it is a mass, after all.
Yes, it
and
is.
Those who may not be familiar with liturgical works, a mass is structured. It has a certain form, a pattern that with some basic elements, right? And so all that is preserved in this. But this is Bernstein's take on how that mass is to be performed. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. And as Dr. Thomas likes to say, if you like West Side Story, you'll hear some of it in this mass.
Yeah. I was a Jet, by the way, in high school.
Oh, yeah, you were?
Yes, I was in West Side. Well, hasn't every kid ever been in West Side Story?
That's right, that's right.
And Music Man, you know, I played my saxophone in Music Man. I was in eighth grade. Yeah, that was the beginnings of my artistic endeavors. And the end, by the way. So, sort of began at the end right there.
I didn't get back.
I learned
a lot.
So you think some of those elements will show up in this?
Oh, definitely. You'll be able to hear them. And the piece goes from Latin to Hebrew to English, and we sing about everything.
It's really neat. It's really, you know, when we first started it, myself, I was a touch skeptical. You know, it's like, I'm not sure about this. But after singing through it and hearing everything kind of come together, I had a moment Monday night at rehearsal, and I'm so excited to perform this and to have people hear it.
Remarkable.
Yeah.
And even for those who may not be musically informed, would you say they should brush up on this before they go to the show, or just get their ticket and walk in, or what's your take on that?
Well, I think it depends on how you like to experience music. If you are someone of a certain age who was around in the 70s, you know, you'll recognize.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I know, Brian. and if not, you may learn something, and it may sound very familiar, kind of like what we just went through.
When
there's reference
jet,
to...
You're a jet all the way from your first cigarette to your last dying day.
No, bah.
Sorry. Yeah, we're not going to hear that, are we? No, that's
no,
not going to
happen. Not going to hear that, but some of the rhythm might be there. And, you know, the chorus is going to try to move and sing at the same time, which is always
a challenging thing.
And you've got these other choral groups coming from the high schools, and which I think is fantastic.
Yes, and there when we have the child soloist is Eleanor Lehman. She's this little tiny girl with a very clear bell-like voice, and she was just so cute. And, you know, you just don't want to miss that.
Get a room full of 200 plus, just completely still and quiet, listening to her sing.
It was
wonderful.
Yes.
Wow.
It'll be just great.
And what a thrill, too. Think about that. As a high school student, you are performing one of the world's greatest works under the direction of one of the world's greatest conductors.
Right, in a wonderful concert hall, too. I mean, you know, it's gorgeous, Ruby Diamond.
Folks, I hope you're feeling this like I'm feeling it, because this is cool stuff. Just, again, out of courtesy here, Tallahassee Community Chorus, tomorrow afternoon, 4 o'clock, Ruby Diamond Concert Hall, Florida State University. You can get your tickets at the door for a measly 20 smackers. And, man, what a great way to spend an afternoon. Bring some friends, right?
Our two assistant conductors will be on the podium, too.
Ah.
The Te Deum, they're going to conduct the Te Deum, Sandy Hinckley and Brandon Boyd, who are both graduate students in choral conducting at Florida State University. And it'll be very interesting because the Te Deum doesn't really have a place that breaks where they can make that conducting change. So we're kind of all waiting to see how that's going to play.
So they'll be wearing sneakers as they run
across.
Yes, there's rumor that Sandy's going to zip line in.
Yes, the owl may bring her in.
Well,
yes.
That would be remarkably,
with baton at the ready.
Seems
at the
like
ready,
that would be very Bernstein of them to do something like that, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Our little theatrical flair.
Right.
Or Andy Kaufman, I don't know, one or the other. You know, so. Well, very cool, folks. Thank you for sharing with us this good news. And I want to say, too, what a great example of the folks at Florida State University who really in large part make this possible because of their contributions musically, their students, their faculty. A great blending of the community, our local schools, the university. This is what we really strive for.
The orchestra largely comes from
faculty
at Florida State, the Symphony Orchestra. You know, it's we like to call it the Tallahassee Community Chorus Orchestra.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's made up of musicians from all around. And there'll be a very large percussion section.
Yes.
With lots of percussion going on.
I imagine.
Hopefully
drowning out my wrong notes.
Well, we'll certainly hope for that. Gabriella Mendizabal, Director of Publicity for Tallahassee Community Chorus, and our good friend Jan Smith, the president. Ladies, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much, Brian.
A real pleasure, always. Folks, stay with me. Coming up at the top of the hour, we've got ABC News, and we'll have more of Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you in part by some of the very fine sponsors that we're pleased to represent for you, including a country rose florist. Wow. Annette McGuffey and her team are absolutely great. Be sure to check them out online, acountryroseflorist.com. This portion of our show is brought to you by The Green Room, Heather Baker and Company. This is an amazing person. And right here in our very own town of Tallahassee, Heather Baker is award-winning, having spent her entire career in hair. And I mean, she really knows how to make you look great for you, not try to make you look like somebody else. And yes, she is officially the hairdresser for Tallahassee Talks. I'm telling you, if I can go in there, guys, listen, stop fooling around with the chop shops around town. Get involved with somebody who really loves this craft. That's what she does, and it's called The Green Room on Lake Ella. They're located at 1425 North Monroe, right there at Lake Ella. You can reach her at 425-5222, or just go to her Facebook page, The Green Room on Lake Ella. It's the best thing you can do for your look this week.
The most talked about topics in town, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So here we are in the second hour of Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny on a special occasion. We're at 6 o'clock here on the Eastern time zone. And doing so as a way of making room for our friends with the University of Florida. They had their game today at noon, and as a matter of courtesy, we step aside so that the pregame show can be heard in its entirety from 9 to 11, or actually from 9 to noon, sorry. So that's what we did. We're here at 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock today, bringing you what we find of greatest interest around town. It's what we do every week for you because we think Tallahassee is a pretty cool place. And the people who make this a cool place are even more cooler. And the coolest things they do include things like HERC, the Holocaust Education Resource Council, and all the people that work very hard to help provide those resources that teachers need to teach the topic of the Holocaust. And then here comes Michael Hirsch as an author and a filmmaker who has written and published this book, The Liberators. Wow. If you've not done so, if you've not read this book, I would challenge you. And I warn you, you have to, at least I had to take it in small doses because the accounts are journalistic. Michael Hirsch is an author, and Michael Hirsch is a journalist. Michael Hirsch is a writer who approaches things in a sort of chronicled way, giving you this firsthand account, but doing so through the eyes and the words the memories of these men and women who were there, who have not only the memories, but even the photos of those events that they encountered, the things that they came upon that they were not prepared to see, not prepared to witness. But they witnessed those things, and in telling their stories to Michael Hirsch, they have been telling that to the world. They have been they've been able to find a way of communicating exactly what they've been living with this last 70 years. 2015 marks the 70th anniversary of the liberation of these death camps, concentration camps. One startling thing I didn't realize until reading this book, we think of Dachau and Auschwitz and the other camps, maybe a dozen that we're familiar with, or we've heard the names said, or maybe written, read them written somewhere. But what I discovered in this writing that Mr. Hirsch brings us, the camps were a massive organization that was very, very highly organized. And as such, those camps that we recognize, like Auschwitz, would serve as a hub for a network of smaller camps that were part of their district, so to speak. So the accounting then identified nearly 22,000 of these slave labor camps, concentration camps, death camps, 22,000. The massive organization of those camps for this very horrible purpose really took me by surprise. And I think in confronting that, begin to ask, how in the world does a culture find itself willing to embrace such terror and barbarism and the kind of thing that you begin to realize when local townspeople, even knowing that they have been defeated, are throwing things and spitting at these prisoners who've been liberated from these camps as they walk through the town, right? So even at that, they are unrepentant in their determination to destroy these people. What is it that would so possess people in their thinking that they are that afraid of another group? So for that reason, then, it seems to me timely. It is pertinent for us to consider what we tolerate, what are we willing to endure or abide with, would be a better way of putting it. Do we look the other way when someone is willing to throw out slurs that may be ethnic or racial, gender-related, age-related? You know, how much abuse are we willing to tolerate among ourselves? That's not a question that I can easily answer, is it? I don't think it is. I think it's the rhetorical question that we have to continue to ask of ourselves and one another. And then in the work that Herc is doing, recognize that it isn't specific to any one class or group of people, that this notion of tolerance of others and difference, the tolerance of differences, is really the shining goal here. And it's the one abuse that we cannot allow ourselves to abide with, that somehow categorically we find ourselves in a position of condemning another group of people. That is the work that Herc is doing in trying to educate all of us, especially our school children, on this topic. And we're going to find out firsthand from Michael Hirsch how his participation in it was life-changing for him. Elsewhere around town, I should give you a little bit of fresh thought as to some other activities going on. We're going to have the performance of the Bernstein Mass tomorrow at 4 o'clock, tomorrow afternoon at 4 at the Ruby Diamond Concert Hall there at Florida State University. Tickets are still on sale. In fact, you can buy them at the door. They're only $20. I would encourage you to check this out. It's a great opportunity. That's tomorrow. And let's see, what else is going on? Ah, Cinderella being performed at the Young Actors Theater. How cool. So they're in performance. Check those folks. And let's see, another opportunity here. Black Dog Literary Night. Yeah, that's cool. That's also Sunday from 7:30 p.m. until 9 p.m. It's there at Black Dog Cafe up there next to Lake Ella. So if you're a literary sort of person. Oh, and here's a really cool thing. Our good friends over at La Fiesta are hosting the Toastmasters Club weekly meeting on Monday evening. So if you want to, and this is Podemos Hablar Toastmasters Club meeting. So this is a great opportunity if you want to brush up on your speaking skills. Maybe I ought to take that in. Given my woeful performance of late, I'm sorry, folks. I need to do better. Do I straighten up and fly right, Brian? What else here? November 17th, 7:30 to 9 p.m. is the Mannheim Steamroller Christmas coming, and that's kind of cool. That's at the Civic Center downtown. See all the cool things going on, and baby time. That's on Tuesday morning from 10:30 to 11. Just to let you know, I'm reading from TallyConnection.com. You can do the same. They are one of the many fine sponsors here for Tallahassee Talks. TallyConnection.com, great place to find out what's going on. And that's what we're all about. We want to keep you informed and keep you plugged in to the very cool things going on around Tallahassee.
For over 40 years, Marvin McFate has been building houses and helping families build their dreams. He's helped Tallahassee grow, too, by building a company based on three simple ideas: dedication, tradition, and innovation. It's a company dedicated to building homes that'll last for generations with time-tested methods and a clear understanding of how to make homes more efficient with modern innovations. Today, Vanguard North stands as a symbol of the best in home building and home renovation. So, here's to you, Tallahassee, and all the families that Vanguard North has had the privilege to serve. Thanks for letting them share in your dreams. You keep on growing, and they'll be here to help you do it with homes you love to live in today and for all your tomorrows. Vanguard North, home builders and renovators, on the web at vanguardnorth.com. Marvin McFate, he's a bit of a dreamer. He's okay with that.
The best place for conversation, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We are approaching the 70th anniversary of the liberation of Nazi concentration camps, death camps, at the close of World War II. In April of 1945, American Allied troops, along with Russian troops, found themselves confronted with the horrors of the Nazi regime and all that had been going on beyond the awareness of a lot of folks. And it happens that on this occasion we have the opportunity to bring to you the local director for our beloved HERC, the Holocaust Education Resource Council in Tallahassee, Barbara Goldstein, the director. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Nice to have you with us. Thank you. And it happens, too, that this week was marked with a number of very important events in recognizing this anniversary of the liberation. HERC, for its part, held their annual benefit dinner Thursday night and featured as their guest speaker a man who is well-known, well-published, a filmmaker, author, Mr. Michael Hirsch, and he is with us as well this morning. Good morning, sir. Good
morning, Brian. Thanks
glad
for
to
having
have you
me
with
here.
Us. And as you might imagine, for me personally, and Barbara, you know this, I approach this whole subject with a great deal of, I don't know what else to call it, reverence, I guess, and personal concern, and with that kind of concern that comes when you recognize not only the significance of these past events, and as horrific as they are, but our current status in the world. And so for me, this is not just a sort of memorializing or a recollection of these things. It is very much about what's going on now, and that's where HERC plays an important role, doesn't it?
Yes, in the local community, we just 2 weeks ago had a big teacher training workshop where we provided teachers with many materials to go back to the classroom and still teach us today because it's so important with what's going on in the world.
For those who are unfamiliar, how would you express or summarize the mission that you bring as this Holocaust education?
The lessons of the Holocaust need to teach the against prejudice and promote humanity. Uh-huh. And tolerance, and it's education is mandated, and they have to teach it in the schools, so we help assist with that in all ways.
And that reminds me, we're at the 20th anniversary then of that.
Right, in 1994, the legislature passed to mandate all schools to teach the Holocaust in their
as part of their curriculum.
Right, as part of their curriculum.
And see, there for me is the broader value, I suppose, or the significance of what you're doing, in as much as this isn't relegated to the concerns of anti-Semitism alone. It's, as you pointed out, it's the whole, I would call it process, even.
It's world history. It's not anti-Semitic. It's world history, is what it comes down to, and European history. And some schools just pass over this very, very fast, and there's so much to cover in European history.
So, with that mission at hand, and your annual fundraiser then happening this last Thursday, you guys decide to bring Michael Hirsch to us, who, for his part, has done, I think, a remarkable job in bringing to us a firsthand account in this book entitled The Liberators, right? Mike, tell us about The Liberators. I know that there's a lot you can say, but what's a good starting point if we're talking about this book, do you think?
I tracked down, and that was a lot of detective work, more than 150 of the GIs, including a handful of female nurses who were involved in the liberation of various camps in as the American forces moved across Germany toward Austria in that period from April 4th, 1945 to May 8th. So I tracked them down, interviewed them, went to a number of reunions of World War II vets to interview people, found most of the people on the phone, and also discovered when I began working on this project that something like this had never been done, which I found almost preposterous. I mean, how in, you know, the 2000s do you discover a new angle on the Holocaust? There have been 100,000 books or more written about various aspects of the Holocaust, including memoirs. An occasional liberator has written a memoir, but until I did this, nobody took a look at the liberation as a rolling event that was coinciding with our basic mission toward the end of the war, which was to chase and kill Germans. So this was a 2+ year project.
And from my read, you approached that whole enterprise from a journalistic point of view. You are the person who is walking us through all of those experiences among those who were liberators themselves, among those who were captives.
Right. My background for my entire life from sixth grade on has been as a journalist and then as a writer. I spent most of my career in
sixth grade.
Sixth grade.
Yes. How did that happen?
I started the Bateman Booster at this grammar school I went to in Chicago and conducted my first interview in sixth grade with a magician who visited the school, and I still see the headline, Mr. Irving Makes Magic, and I began asking questions then and never stopped.
You're so annoying.
So how are you feeling? So how are you feeling this morning?
feeling great now.
But the neat thing need is the wrong word. The important thing for me is that I did approach this journalistically, which is basically to say, just because somebody tells you something doesn't mean it's true.
Yeah.
That can be real annoying. You know, people wonder, well, why aren't you believing me? Everybody else believed me.
Given the state of our current political scene.
Right. But
everything we hear is a lie.
But,
God.
I mean, just because somebody said, oh, I was at the camps, it wasn't, oh, yeah, well, tell me everything.
Not necessarily so.
It's the difference between what people describe as oral history, which is I'll set up a microphone or set up a camera in front of you, and I may have a list of questions, ask the questions, or you tell me your story. At the end of it, we turn everything off, we say thank you very much, and we archive that and call it the truth. Not so. Or as the song went, it ain't necessarily so.
And there have been a number of accounts, I think, Barbara, you've pointed to this, where people claimed something to be true, and then you found out later, no.
How do we?
It's a fake.
Yeah, we have to go back and do it and check our facts. Even today, survivors will say their story, but how do we know if it's true or not? We have to really check the facts. And that's the problem, that every survivor and even every liberator has a different story.
Talking with Barbara Goldstein, she is the director of the Holocaust Education Resource Council here in Tallahassee, and Michael Hirsch, author of The Liberators, and you're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. We'll be right back.
So, how's your car running?
Oh, it's great.
Well, that's good. And where'd you go?
SS Performance Group over on the west side of town. They are the real pros.
I thought SS Performance Group was for
engine modification.
Right, and
muscle cars. Yeah, right. And oil changes, brakes, and tune-ups. Everything for every car. So I figure go pro with the best for everything I need, right?
Yeah, so they can work on my SUV.
Yep. Go pro.
SS Performance Group at 431 Capital Circle Southwest. Go online or call 575-0259.
Time to check out our buddy Joe over at Truck and Car Concepts. What's going on, man?
Hey, man, what's going on with you guys?
Well, here's the deal. I heard that you were gone all day as you were out tinting a house.
Yes, sir. His customer was having a big heat problem on the west side of the house in the afternoon. We went over, did the estimate, decided to do the east side of the house as well. Let me tell you something. We knocked out 79% of the heat energy, which is going to totally knock down the electricity bill. Not only that, but she had some really nice paintings that were fading out in the living room. 99% ultraviolet ray illumination.
So it would fade out like carpets and drapes and furniture and stuff?
Not only that, but it also fades out those expensive hardwood floors. So window filming the house is nothing but a plus. It takes down the heat energy, and that's, bottom line.
So even though the place is called Truck and Car Concepts, you could throw a house in there too.
We can do houses, planes, trains, or automobiles, man. If it's got glass, we tint it. Truck and Car Concepts, 656-8800. Give us a call.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back talking with Barbara Goldstein, Michael Hirsch, talking about this remarkable book, The Liberators, that Michael Hirsch has authored. And in this week of remembrance, Thursday night, the local Holocaust Education Resource Council, also known as HERC, held their annual benefit. And Michael, you were the guest speaker for that evening. Let's get a little further into the book itself. And you've given us some of your personal background and some of the, I guess we'd say, the impetus for you. I remember watching a video where you're talking about this idea, and you were quite candid about the fact that this is your job, and this is what you do for a living. And like any reasonable business person, entrepreneur, you got to think about, how do I make a living? How do I sell what I do? So if we're looking for an idea that sells, your agent might ask, what is that? And this idea had been kind of filed away with you.
Right. I had just finished working on a book called None Braver, where I was embedded with Air Force pararescue men in Pakistan and Afghanistan.
I see.
And I was in a conversation with the editor of that book at a publishing house in New York, and I said, I'm looking for something else to write. And he said, well, World War II stories are still selling. And I said, I'll call you back. And literally, less than 3 minutes later, I called him back and I said, I want to track down the guys who liberated the camps and talk about not only what they saw and did then, but how it's affected their lives 60-some years later. And the reason that was in my head is because 3 weeks before that, I'd been watching a PBS show called The Jewish Americans. Ah. And there was an interview with a lawyer in New York named Alan Moskin, who talked about being at a camp called Gunskirchen. And it was like 30 seconds. And as somebody who's produced documentaries all his life and is always looking for, you know, what's next, there's that little place in your brain where you file away stories to either be resurrected or where they go to die. Huh. And that was just in my head. And I came out with it, and he said, that's a great idea. And I talked to my agent, and then they both said, you got to find out whether somebody's done this. And I went looking, and as I mentioned earlier, much to my surprise, it's never been done.
And certainly not done with the kind of clarity, if I may say. To me, the fact that we're able to see it through the eyes of those men and women who are involved in the liberation of these camps, and a guy like Morton Brooks, who is part of the story, who himself, as an American soldier, is taken captive, I guess, following the Battle of the Bulge. Is that how that worked out? And somewhere in that time frame, he finds himself a prisoner and telling us of his experiences as a prisoner.
Right. They were a number of GIs were captured, taken to one of the Stalags, and then an order came down saying they needed 350 prisoners to be sent to Berga, which was a slave labor camp digging tunnels into mountains, and they wanted all the Jewish prisoners to go. And actually, there weren't 350 Jewish prisoners, but they managed to find all the ones who were there. And several of them essentially changed their identity. Their dog tags didn't say they were Jewish, but others basically said, I'm not going to hide this. Well, they were sent to Berga. Brooks, whose name at the time was Brimberg, Morton Brimberg, and managed barely to survive. I mean, as they got to the camp, they passed what they later learned were Polish slave laborers in, you know, the final stages of death. This is, you're not getting enough food, you're working, you know, 18 hours a day, you've got to deal with disease and everything else. And they were really looking at their future as they walked past them.
One of the remarkable assertions there is the idea that when you are part of a system that is crazy or constricted in some manner, you will conform to that system. And that is a truth that has informed, I would say, much of psychotherapy in the last 60 years, where, you know, you look at Virginia Satir and she says, you know, when you live inside of a family that is structured in a crazy way, you'll act crazy. Because a lot of people say, well, why didn't you fight back? Why didn't you try to? Well, yeah, tell us about that. Why was that happening?
The GIs did what they could. Yeah. The number who were taken prisoner and sent to these camps was relatively small in the context of what we're talking about today. But they did their best to survive. You mentioned Morton Brooks, and there's a couple stories that I'd like to tell you about him.
Yeah.
When the end came and they were marched out of the camp because the Allies were closing in, and it was the order of Hitler or his command that our prisoners should not fall into Allied hands, which means, you know, march them to death or get them away. So they marched them out, and they're marching through this little town of Berga, and the German civilians were spitting on them and screaming at them and yelling at them. I mean, you'd think they would have said at that time, the war's over, the American army is, you know, like 10 minutes away, but that's how they treated them. And then Brooks comes back to America, and he's trying to get into, I forget if it was college or graduate school, it's in the book, and he's not getting responses to his applications. And a friend looked at it and said, change your name from Brimberg to Brooks. And as soon as he did that, he began getting responses, ultimately became a clinical psychologist with a PhD degree.
Remarkable. And Barbara, this is exactly, it seems to me, the point that Herc brings to us in mm-hmm. saying, folks, you cannot look at the end result and wonder, how did this all happen? You have to look at where you are right now in this culture and in this time when any kind of prejudicial thinking is somehow tolerated. Mm-hmm. Michael, you talk about German citizens who obviously for a length of time had embraced this kind of thinking, that they would have tolerated that in themselves, then laid the foundation, didn't it? It was the sort of seedbed.
If you ask me, what are the stories that stick with you after researching this for so long?
Yeah,
it's those kind of stories. I'd been interviewing some veterans, and one of them said to me, "Do you know about Gardelegen?" And I said, "No." He said, "Look it up." So I looked up Gardelegen, and Gardelegen was a place where they were moving train loads of slave labor camp inmates away from the onrushing American forces. And there were two train loads. One, I believe, came from a camp at Flossenbürg. But the Allies had bombed out the tracks. So the train stopped, and they get about 2,000 of these prisoners off the train. And at the time, there were no more, according to the records, and 31 SS guards. And they begin marching them, okay? And they come to this town of Gardelegen, where the local Gauleiter has managed to scare the hell out of the local populace and say, well, we don't want to have happen here what happened at some other village 30 miles from here where the prisoners got loose and raped and plundered. So there was a stucco grain barn, a granary, on the edge of town. And by the time they got to that place, the number 2,000 had dwindled to just over 1,000. The others were shot and left dying by the road, or dead by the roadside. Well, they herded them into this barn after covering the floor with straw and pouring cans of petrol on it, gasoline. And they closed the doors. Now, I'll back up a little. The local forces didn't have any problem getting the villagers in the town to help do that. And I keep saying, what kind of mother, you know, tells her son, Fritz, you go help set up to murder these people and make sure, you know, you're back home by 5 because I've got your favorite Wiener Schnitzel for dinner. But that's what they did.
Horrific.
You know, they herded them in there, they locked the door, and they set the place on fire. 1,016 people were essentially incinerated. And the kids, the German youth, who earlier in the war people thought of them as, you know, more like Boy Scouts. By the end of the war, you know, they were using them to try and shoot and kill. They set up guns around there, so if anybody managed to get out, they were to kill them.
Talking with author Michael Hirsch, Barbara Goldstein here talking about Herc, and you are in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny here on a Saturday special time, 5 o'clock till 7 o'clock today. Looking through this book, The Liberators, that Mr. Hirsch has authored and brought to us, with a kind of almost a holy reverence. I mean, that's how I felt as I'm reading through. I feel like I'm reading somebody's diary. And folks, I encourage you to get the book and read it. For any of you or any of your friends who say that the Holocaust is a fake, yeah, well, check this out. I think you're going to have to reckon with the facts as Mr. Hirsch has brought them to us. Stay with me. We'll be back right after this.
So, how's your car running?
Oh, it's great.
Well, that's good. And where'd you go?
SS Performance Group over on the west side of town. They are the real pros.
I thought SS Performance Group was for like...
engine modification.
Right, and...
muscle cars. Yeah, right. And oil changes, brakes, and tune-ups. Everything for every car. So I figure go pro with the best for everything I need, right?
Yeah, so they can work on my SUV.
Yep. Go pro.
SS Performance Group at 431 Capital Circle Southwest. Go online or call 575-0259.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So here we are talking with Michael Hirsch, author of The Liberators, and Barbara Goldstein, director of Herc, the wonderful organization in Tallahassee that helps educate and provide resource for educators all about the Holocaust. The Holocaust Education Resource Council, having held their annual benefit dinner earlier this week. Michael Hirsch, the guest speaker, and our guest this morning.
Before the break, Brian, you used the word denial.
Yeah.
And when I began working on this project, that was weighing heavily on my mind. That, you know, people denying the Holocaust, this book, it'll refute that. And when I would contact a veteran who had been there, inevitably they'd say, well, why are you doing this? And initially I would say, well, you know, the people are denying that it happened. You know, this is a good way. And they brushed it aside. They said, denial is not a reason to do this. The Holocaust is the best documented event in history. Yeah. You know, we documented it in film and in memoir and every other way. And the Germans were meticulous in documenting it. So these veterans weren't concerned about denial.
Yeah.
They agreed to tell their story because they felt it needed to be told and people needed to hear it. And in many cases, they agreed to tell me their story because, frankly, they knew they're nearing the end of their lives. The age range of the people I talked to was 83 to 96. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, they had never talked about it.
Wow.
There were more than half a dozen occasions where I'd ask a man, when did you tell your wife and your family? And they'd say, I never did. Or they'd say, I never told my wife. She's hearing about it now for the first time because she's sitting next to me while you're talking to
me. Wow. And as they're trying to recall this stuff, it's crystal clear in their minds, right? I mean,
not crystal clear are dates and locations. What is crystal clear are the events that happened. And in some cases, a guy would tell me what unit he was in, approximately what date it was, and I had to figure out what he's talking about by going back to the Army records, the Army chronology of World War II, which is specific almost down to the battalion level, day by day, as to what unit was where. So if a guy can tell you, well, I was with Company A of the 21st, you know, of the 3rd Battalion, 14th Regiment, such and such infantry division, I can pretty much pinpoint where they were.
It's one of the characteristics, I think, of really great authors. Barbara, would you agree that it's somebody who spends these countless hours? I mean, when you talk about 150, 180 people that you had to track down, I mean, where did you start? You know, and probably more importantly, when did you know you were done?
Well, my regret was that I didn't start 10 years earlier when there would be many more people. But I started with just a couple of people who sent me to other people. And then actually when I was writing the proposal for the book, because in nonfiction writing you do a book proposal and publishers
take a look
and say, we want that or we don't.
Yeah.
And I went to the reunion of the 42nd Division, the Rainbow Division, in Mobile, Alabama. Now, an Army division is about 15,000 people. In 2000, I forget if I went in 2007 or 2008, I went to their reunion in Mobile, Alabama. There were 45 guys there.
Wow.
And of the 45, 3 or 4, you know, had been
on the scene.
And in particular for them, it was Dachau.
Yeah.
And that's what you start with. But you also get directed to people, and we're sort of coming back to where we started, who everybody knows they have these great stories, and you interview them and they tell you these great stories and you go, man, that is terrific. And you're just recording it and you're going, this is great. I actually, in the sample chapter in the book proposal was all about this one veteran who had these incredible stories, had been recommended. He had a relationship with the Holocaust Museum in Washington, everything else. He told me that he had been named one of the, what used to be called the Righteous Gentiles, of the world for having saved so many Jews.
Yeah.
And I kept asking him for documentation. He said, well, nobody's asked me for this. He sent me pounds of newspaper clippings, but they were inevitably interviews with him where he made the claim. And in his case, I finally emailed Yad Vashem, which is the Holocaust Memorial near Jerusalem, and which maintains that list of the righteous. And I said, is his name on the list? And by the way, are there any American soldiers on the list? And they wrote back and said, his name's not on the list, and there are no American soldiers on the list. There are 4 Americans. So I, you know, that story helped sell the book. It's not in the book. because it was just, and much as, you know, one of my mentors when I was, you know, just a young kid starting out in broadcasting, no, this is early in broadcasting, said, you know, never kill your own story, you know, because if you have good journalistic instincts and you believe it, well, that was a story I killed. You know, it's not in there. I ran into a number of other people like that, and the stories aren't in there. But what that really says is that the stories that are in here, you can take to the bank.
Did that transform you as you went forward? I mean, you started with, "Hey, I'm going to write a book, it's got some degree of likelihood of success, you know, and such." And then as you start to get into these interviews, what happened for you?
It becomes pervasive. You know, you wake up in the middle of the night thinking about things somebody said, thinking about a lead that you have to track down, thinking about a phone call you made where a woman answered the phone because you've been told that, you know, Joe Blow was there and had this, and you dial the number. You finally found the number, and you say, "Is this so-and-so?" "Yes." I said, "Is Joe there?" "Well, he died 2 years ago," you know. You think a lot about that. It's inevitable also at some point while you're writing a book to go, why did I ever start this project and believe I could do it?
And you started, when did you start your research? How many years ago?
I think 2007.
Seven. And spent, what, 3 years?
Two and a half years working pretty much full time.
Yeah. Do you think differently now about the Holocaust than you did when you first started?
I'll tell you what I think differently about. It confirmed the fact that I don't believe in God. About an equal number of the guys I asked, I said, you know, about religion, an equal number said that they lost their belief in God having seen this, and the same number said they became clergymen because of it. But I came out of it convinced that how can there be a God who let this happen, and if somebody tries to play the free will card, I'm not interested in hearing it, because God should have been paying closer attention. I hope that didn't alienate half your audience, but it's what it
is. Or one, the other half. So we try to play both sides here, you know, on all occasions, on any topic. University of Florida football, Florida State football, I mean, it's all good, bro.
I see.
So... well, folks, this is what we do here. We bring to you the most curious, interesting, cool folks we can find. And it happens that we found Michael Hirsch, courtesy of the very good people at HERC, Barbara Goldstein, our guest, along with Mr. Hirsch this morning. We've certainly not given enough courtesy to this man for the work that he's done. The book is called The Liberators, and I believe it to you, folks, to find it for yourselves. It's available at Amazon.com, among other places. And you should. You should get it and read it. And then send Barbara a check. Help her keep doing the work that she's doing. And everybody wins, right? All right, folks. Thanks for being with us this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Or this afternoon, actually. Thanks. Here we are at 5 o'clock. I'm so used to saying morning.
Thank you.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, a production of Alcom Marketing and Advertising, and always here because we want to know what you're talking about. So come on, Tallahassee. Come talk to me. Have you heard about TallyConnection.com? These are the folks who bring us all of the events and activities going on around town. It's a great little spot. TallyConnection.com. Go to that particular blog. You can find out everything you want to know about fundraisers and kids' activities and festivals and concerts. It's all